Just King Things bonusode, Mr. Mercury Season 2.
I'm in a coma.
I'm Cameron, and this is Coma Michael. You got the dead zone over there? Is the dead zone happening to you over there?
I've got a whole mind palace situation, although it's, you know, more of a mind basement. Although it's a pretty big basement, and I'm doing lots of things in here where it's unclear what these might correspond to outside of the space inside my head, but I'm, you know...
Now, this is a personal question I'm going to ask you about your mind basement.
Uh-huh.
But I would really appreciate it if you'll be honest about what I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
Are you masturbating in there?
I guess I am. That's that seems to be happening in addition to all of the push-ups and, like, I'm making orange juice at one point, maybe, I think.
Listen, don't call it by a euphemism.
Uh-huh.
Do it or don't, okay?
Having conversations with various dead people I know, which makes
Again,
more sense.
Stop actually. Calling masturbating yeah. by a euphemism.
Sorry, guys, I can't go out tonight. I gotta go home and have conversations with various dead people.
Oh, there's Michael. He's doing it again. Jesus. He might as well not tell us about it. Uh-huh. I don't know. It's your favorite television show about an old Greek man who owns a diner. It's Mr. Mercedes, of mm-hmm. course. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm looking at the wrong thing. This is Mr. Mercedes.
Alas.
Is your favorite show about a guy with a turtle? Tortoise.
Yeah.
I thought
they were going to kill the tortoise this season, and I was going to be so pissed.
They explicitly dangle that in front of you.
I know.
You like that they were like, because there's a tragic, you know, spoilers for a thing you're listening to where we talk about the thing. There's a tragic dog killing that occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like an egregious dog killing.
Yeah.
Like we just read our first book about screenwriting. Yeah. And we've come to the conclusion we got to kill a guy, no one gives a shit about him guy. We got to kill his dog. And I think it's the sacrificial creature, so the turtle does not have to die.
Right, yes. All of the weird...
Symbolically, the turtle dies in the guise of the other thing.
The dog, and it's a famous Latin legend.
What?
Isn't that he also like writes the Latin phrase?
He does. You're right. You're uh-huh. right. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. I meant legend as in thing written in Latin, not like the famous Latin legend of the dead dog.
That's what I was scraping my brain being like, was there a Latin legend about a dead dog? Caesar talking about a dead dog at any point? I don't think so. How would you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Mr. Mercedes Season 2. It's back. This is a little weird because, in the books, the mainline episode this month was Finders Keepers, which is a book about an evil guy who stole some journals, really.
Mm-hmm.
And for the television program of Mr. Mercedes, they took book 3 and did it as season 2. And presumably mm-hmm. book 2 is season 3, although that's not confirmed to me yet.
It is the case.
Okay.
I double checked.
Okay. Yeah, good to know. And so we have gotten a little bit of a preview here about what's coming in book 3. But I think you mentioned on the mainline episode, what's given to us is so wild that I imagine the book's even wilder.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine like what Stephen King gets up to with the things that I see here that are close to things that I've seen him use before, but without what I feel here are the constraints of budget and then constraints of whatever the plan was for swapping these two seasons, right? Like the fact that there has to like because of what the hell's the book called? It's called End of Watch. because End of Watch is billed as the last of a trilogy, I feel like it can probably do some big swings just by dint of what it is. And by moving this story to the middle, my suspicion is, and this is in no way, like, this is pure speculation on my part. I actually looked into this, tried to figure out if there was any, like, on the record reason why they did this flip. And I couldn't find it. But my speculation is, for some reason, I mean, I think they wanted to, like, do season one, season two, because they both had Brady. They wanted to bring in book three and do season two. And then they wanted to have the Finders Keepers season be a potential, like, lead in to additional non-book seasons. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of how it feels.
Right.
Is that, you know, you cash out the Brady story, period.
Right.
And then you can move. You finally, we can move along or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how it felt to me.
Yeah. So that's just, like, purely my suspicion. I don't know what actually happens next season. And having not read the book that this season was based on, I don't know if any of that is the case. But yeah, this is still a TV series that is like a basic crime thriller procedural where a guy is psychic.
Oh, a guy's never been more psychic. A guy makes another guy psychic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, psychic becomes, it's like, has transferent properties.
Well, I mean, you want to get into it?
Yeah.
Let me see here. If I can pull, I need to pull up. I don't have IMDb. I have, it immediately went to Ralph Brown.
Of course, yeah.
Uh-huh. From Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, and Alien 3, and some other thing we watched.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I need to look at Mr. Mercedes. I wrote I've butchered this as much as someone can. Mercedes. Here we go. Okay. I had a bunch more D's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to find season two. Because I'm curious, did David E. Kelly stuck around the whole time?
I don't know if he stuck around the whole time. Definitely the directors are sticking around, it looks like. A lot of Jack Bender. Peter Weller directed a few of these.
Peter Weller?
Yes, the Peter
Weller. That Peter Weller?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
why?
I don't know. He directs TV these days. That's one of the things he does.
Peter Weller?
Yes.
RoboCop?
Yes. I feel
Bill,
like we've watched
from Naked Lunch.
I feel like we've watched something he directed at some point, or we've talked about this at some other point.
I mean, sure, we could have talked about it yesterday and I wouldn't remember.
Okay, all right,
you're right. One episode. Yeah, 2018. Huh? Andalay. It's one of these. Eager to prosecute Brady, Montez turns up the heat on Dr. Babineau. All right, so maybe we'll you know, hit a big summary here at the top, because this show, the reason I'm asking these questions about what's going on, how's things changing, I'm now seeing here against my will, seeing someone who's in the next season, that's going to suck. But we get all this kind of information, you know, in development about the world,
mm-hmm.
in a pretty quick way, and it feels very different than the first season.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that way?
Yeah, it feels. I mean, the situation is just. Let me double check my notes here, because, like, what is it that we get in the first two episodes? So the first episode is. It becomes this, like, medical espionage thriller,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's really how it starts out, is we focus on Brady being taken in after Holly Gibney beats the shit out of him.
Yeah, so maybe we should recap.
Yeah.
Brady
mm-hmm.
is the Mr. Mercedes killer.
Yes.
He ran into a bunch of people who were at a job fair and crushed them with a big Mercedes that he stole. The whole first season is a big, complicated mess about trying to figure out who did it, why they did it, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They figured it out. His name is Brady. And he went to a local... What was the actual... It's like a fundraiser, an arts-based fundraiser for the local community center.
Yeah, it's like there's like a new arts gallery or something that the city is opening.
It's like what the kids from the Sandlot got up to afterward. You know what I mean? Like, what did they do when they became adults? Well, they opened the local community center, you know, community arts center, whatever.
Sure.
They did that stuff. It's just like wholesome Americana shit. He goes there and he just starts... carving through people. He goes Professor X mode, you know, he's pretending to be a wheelchair user, all this stuff. And he stabs his coworker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know her name.
Lou.
And betrays Lou fundamentally. Mm-hmm. And then he's gonna get up to some shenanigans, and Holly Gibney clubs him in the back of the head with the Happy Slapper.
Mm-hmm.
In
the book, it's the Happy Slapper. In the TV show, it's a dog statue.
Oh, but I guess I'm getting bamboozled, because the second season, the Happy Slapper does show up.
It does, surprisingly.
Right. So that's why I was transposing what I just saw with what. Yeah, that's right. She clubs him in the head with that dog statue and beats his old noodle apart. Now we cut to season two. Felix Babineau.
Uh-huh.
It's the weirdest like setup. What is that? It's him and his
wife. I still don't quite understand.
Is she a wife to begin with? Are they married at the beginning?
I don't know, because I didn't think they were. I thought they were having an affair, but then it turned out they were married. Because they act like they're having an affair. Felix Babineau, played by what's his name? He's a Houston, Jack Houston, looking very unfortunately like Johnny Depp in his Mordecai era.
He does look like Johnny Depp in the Mordecai era. That's funny. Well, he's the world's greatest detective. I don't know what you want. This guy, unfortunately, kind of has that. It's not his fault that he came up in an era where, like, looking like a kind of a number two Johnny Depp was like a pretty good thing to be doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
What else has he been doing?
Johnny Depp?
No. Yeah. Johnny Depp. Yeah, Michael, give me the Johnny Depp update.
Uh-huh.
No. Jack Houston, because I feel like I've seen him in a lot of stuff, but I'm looking and I... Looks like he played RFK in The Irishman. I guess I saw that. He was in Fargo. He was in the TV. Yeah. Oh, he was in that third season of Fargo.
It looks like, yeah, I haven't seen Fargo beyond.
I know exactly where I know him from.
What is that? Is it the Twilight Saga Eclipse where he plays Royce King II?
No, I'm only familiar with the Royce King I, the father.
I see. Oh, it's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, where he plays Wickham.
It is, in fact, not that. Is Wickham zombified from day one, you think? Should be.
He should be, yes.
I hate Mr. Wickham. Fuck off, Wickham.
He's a bit of a cad. Is it from Hail Caesar?
It's not, although I'm not surprised he's in that. Does he play... George Clooney's body double or whatever in that?
He plays Cat in Cab.
Oh, that's fun. Uh-huh. No, it's because he is the bad guy in House of Gucci.
Oh.
One of my favorite movies. He's Domenico, the lawyer who, spoilers for House of Gucci if you hadn't gotten there yet, uh-huh. But he's the lawyer who is like hyper loyal to everyone. But at the end, in real life, because this really happened, he does a hostile takeover and takes over the Gucci brand. So that eventually, in the end, and this is like the big reveal at the end. It's, you know, the we were on Earth the whole time uh-huh. of the movie is, you know, as of blank blank year that Desolée or whatever his name is, that lawyer, that he takes over the company. As of that year, there are no Guccis involved in the Gucci brand. And we're supposed to like put our hands over our mouths and just try and keep the vomit in, you know?
Yeah.
Do you see House of Gucci?
I did not. No.
What if you tried to film like a biopic about the Gucci family and you filmed it like Gladiator?
Oh, okay.
Like every scene, it's one of the wildest melodramas I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Everyone is like doing an accent that they're so far away from. Absolutely awful Jared Leto, who I do not care for whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, delivers a performance that I will never forget in my entire life. Because he plays, like, he's in a fat suit, all this stuff. I don't much care for that. But, like, he's always talking about the Gucci. And he's the brother. And he has this voice the whole time. And he's like, it's the worst stereotype of an Italian person you could be doing.
Yeah.
But everyone's allowed to do it, I guess. I don't really understand how it works. But it is a movie that, you know, if you're listening to this episode, you've probably heard my movie opinions before. And you probably know if you align with me or you don't. If you think you align with me on movies, watching House of Gucci is a good use of your time. I love it. But yes, he plays the bad guy.
All right.
Jeremy Irons is in it too. God.
I was just seeing that. I was thinking, like, oh yeah, Jeremy Irons. I need to do a Brideshead rewatch.
Jeremy Irons is like, I think he plays the father, maybe. I can't remember. Like, which role, but I remember he's, like, way out in the countryside, like, manually processing pig flesh for leather. And, like, that's part of, like, the magic of him. Maybe he's a cousin or something. I don't remember. I don't remember the beat-by-beat of the plot, unfortunately. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Mr. Mercedes.
We are.
So he's there, and he's got a wife, girlfriend, fiance.
Uh-huh. She's like, hey, babe. If you injected this special serum into that brain trauma patient, we could have a baby together. He's like, yes. That's okay. Yes, ma'am. Sounds- Hello, nurse.
Oh, God. Bonk, bonk, bonk.
So, yeah, that happens. Like, Brady is being given, like, doses of a secret experimental, like, hormone that the neurosurgeon's wife is urging him to, or not even, like, prescribe, because they're doing it secretly. And she is doing this because she is employed by a company that makes it, which is Chinese.
Now, wait a minute. Are you telling me that the company is Chinese?
It's a Chinese company.
The most evil in the show, not in real life, but in the show, perhaps the most evil nationality?
It is.
I'm struggling to think of a more evil nationality than the Chinese.
It is just very flatly presented as scary that there is a Chinese pharmaceutical company here. And it gets really wild once we find out, like, the history of this medication and its tests.
Yeah, so she is played by, I'm trying to pull it up here, Tessa Ferrer. And I don't even know what the name her, what... I'm sure they say her name 1,000 times. Cora Babineau.
Yes, that's right.
Eventually, it is, they wait till the very end because there's all this like hinting and mystery. Ooh, you know, human rights violations. It's very much anytime China comes up all the time. They're like, mm-hmm. People are always like, well, you know, what they're doing over in China.
Mm-hmm.
What they've done there.
Well, you see,
and sometimes you got to be like, well, I don't know. You know about like the Tuskegee experiments y'all have heard about?
Yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. what people have done here. But so there's all that. But it's saved until the very end, one of the last episodes, where she goes, golly gee whiz, Dr. Babineau, my husband. I guess I'll tell you the whole deal. Yes, we've been giving it to people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it made them psychic.
Yeah, it's like there's like 12 test subjects or something that were like Chinese prisoners. And then it ended with like 50% of the test subjects killing themselves. And it somehow communicated to you that this happened because the other 50% became psychic and made them do it.
There was an experimental group and a control group.
Oh, that was it.
And the control group all died.
Yes, because the experimental group. I guess naturally did this. Like that's, they were given the brain hormone, became psychic. And then their thought was, well, I need to make the control group die. So yeah. Obviously, when she needs another test subject for this experimental hormone, the person that she pushes it upon via her neurosurgeon husband is a, like, brain-damaged serial killer?
Yeah, it's like, what if we gave Ted Bundy the Flowers for Algernon drugs?
Yes, right.
And it's like, why are we doing that? There's not anyone else?
Like, I understand that you're evil and corrupt, but can you think for, like, 5 minutes here? Like, if you just gave a sample of random prisoners this and they became psychic murderers, what's this guy going to do?
Well, I mean, shockingly, it fixes him, so...
This is also
eggs on our face on this one.
It fixes him and it becomes completely unimportant. That's the other thing that's wonderful, is like someone becomes psychic. Like, someone is literally made psychic. This is like if in the middle of an episode of Law and Order, one of the people who is being, like, badgered repeatedly by those cops is like, by the way, I'm psychic now. And then there was, like, 5 minutes of, like, them being psychic and, like, controlling things with their mind and whatever. But then it really came down
Ice-T comes in. They're calling it being psychic.
One dose of these hormones and it's prom night forever. Everyone's Carrie. But this happens. Like, it literally happens. Like, Brady becomes psychic. He does psychic shit. And the climax of this show or this season is him just going on trial for the serial murders he already in the mass murders he already did. And, does the fact that he grew, like, he regrew brain tissue. Does that mean that he's, like, legally a new person?
It's so cool.
Like,
I legitimately enjoy the end of this season, which is absurd. It is patently absurd. There's a weird thing that happens in this too, which is it's not the same as the book two, right? Like, it's its own. I mean, it's on its own. It's book three. But we talked a lot in the mainline episode of, like, or about how it's kind of not like Bill Hodges doesn't really need to be in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's fun for him to be around, but we don't need him.
Right.
And the same thing is true in this season. Like, in the season of the show,
yes.
Presumably Bill Hodges does need to be in book three for, like, these things to work. But he just happens to be around.
Yeah. No, he happens to be around because he's obsessed with Brady. And because Brady is obsessed with him, Brady, like, pokes at him some. But the secret protagonist of this entire season is Lou.
Yeah. It is Lou.
Like, this is a season about Lou and Brady's relationship and how that resolves.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know who really doesn't belong in this season?
Who doesn't? Holly Gibney, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like the most tertiary character that ever was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's the big sketch. It comes down the last two episodes. There's 10 episodes in the season. The last two are just this, like, philosophical adventure of if a guy goes into a coma, if a murderer goes into a coma and comes out and says, I'm a different guy, do you have to, are you legally required to believe him?
Yeah. Right? Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's going on?
I don't know the law on this one. I got to be honest. Do you know the law on this one?
I don't know person law, unfortunately. Personhood law. I wonder if anyone's tried that, like, as precedent.
To be like, I'm not the same guy?
Right.
Someone had to have. That seems too easy to go for, to not try.
Yeah.
At least once. I really don't know, but I would say yes. Almost certainly. And no, that has nothing to do with my upcoming legal case. You want to share some steaks here? You want to talk steaks real quick?
T-bones, New York
flank
strip. Yeah.
Other stakes. Mm-hmm. Just two men here talking stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Just two cool guys.
Okay, so if we want to know the stakes of the story, well, we need to have a good adventure in order to get young Jerome back on the right track because he's vaping while driving.
Young Jerome has undergone a trauma the likes of which many of us have never seen. He had to go to Harvard.
Yep. And it sucked.
And it was bad. And lo, that he found there, Harvard University. The end of days. let's go through our roster of characters from the previous season. Number one, Bill Hodges.
Okay, so Bill is here. He's getting healthy, and he's opened a detective agency with Holly called Finders Keepers. It runs out of an old Chinese restaurant, which is like a joke, but it's a joke that's never made, right? It's like, it's just purely a visual joke. They just have this shitty old Chinese restaurant that they're constantly going to and hanging out in.
Really kind of two competing modes of Chinese representation, if you think about it.
Oh, huh. That is interesting. I guess.
I mean, I don't know what to do
for
about
a given
that,
definition of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta move your, you know, what you think the word interesting means a little bit, but yeah.
So he's doing that. He is kind of generally, he's fixated on Brady, but also really kind of fixated on the fact that Brady killed his girlfriend. And he's got this, like, you know, his neighbor, who's a nice sassy lady who thankfully can have any goddamn job the plot needs her to.
She's just summer school.
She was a mortician before, but she used to be a teacher, as she explains. Yeah,
she also inherited what do you call it? Like an old folks home?
The mortuary, I think, is what she inherited.
Oh, for some reason I thought,
because they had to go to her in the first season when someone identified a body or something.
Yeah, why does she did just summer school so she can hand out the tablets, right?
Yes.
That's it.
That's it. So we know that the tablets exist. I think more happens with this probably in the book, because based on the logic of like what these tablets do elsewhere in the story, it seems like Brady like goes wider in the book than he ends up doing with his psychic powers here. That's just my guess. But anyway, she's not important because she's not who I'm talking about now. I'm talking about Bill Hodges, who still hasn't slept with her. Instead, he's busy sleeping with his ex-wife, played by Nancy Travis.
Yeah, am I supposed to know who this woman is?
I don't think so.
She was like presented as if it was like, oh my God, the guest star is here.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is just a person to me.
I don't know if I got the strong sense, like, in terms of framing. I was like, oh, this is Bill's ex-wife. I recognized her because she's a returning Kingiverse player from something we haven't watched. She's one of the protagonists of the Rose Red miniseries.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So. He has multiple conversations with her. Like, that's really what Bill's plot is about here, is him sort of fixating on Brady and like the weird things happening in Brady's unit, which he's right to fixate on, but also doesn't do really shit to stop. The progress for him is reconnecting with his ex-wife and like learning to live a little. Because he also feels bad that his job is basically just like repossessing the cars of poor people.
Yeah, he feels bad about it. And that's a great feeling bad scene. Like Finders Keepers, like their company that he and Holly have. On one hand, it's like, oh yeah, they're like tracking down the baddies. But then of the like five jobs or something we see him do, two of them are just real bad.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like a he repossesses this woman's car. She's like getting ready to leave for work first thing in the morning. She begs for him not to do it, and he does it anyway. And as he's driving away, he looks in the back seat and sees that there's a car seat, right? And he realizes, oh, she's got a, I mean, he already knew she had a kid, I think. There was something about she was mentioning having a kid, but like the fact that the car seat is there in the car that he just repossessed makes him feel like shit. And then there's the father who has two boys. Is it like, is it two sons that he's like on the run with, essentially?
Yep.
He tracks them down to a weird kind of like amusement park slash mini golf course thing. And he has that conversation with the guy in the pig outfit. There's just some really like, there's some like very colorful scenes here, even though they ultimately don't matter.
Well, I think that's like the funny thing about the season is because everything that is actual Mr. Mercedes plot stuff from the first season, none of it matters. Like, not a single thing. Mm-hmm. You could have just seen the final 15 minutes of that last episode and you have literally everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to like bulk up the show to make all these people that had like whole arcs in that first season matter.
Right.
Like Bill. Which you would never think you'd be in that position.
Right.
Yet they are, for sure.
Right. Yeah, no, and so that guy is just like, God, is he an immigrant? Is he undocumented or something? Or like,
no, he's just like a working class guy.
Yeah. I just
know because he was like a drug mule.
Oh, that was it. And so like his, but anyway, so like if he gets arrested, basically his kids go into the foster system.
And the people kill him.
Yeah.
So he's on the run from everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone is here.
Yep. So Bill doesn't like that. Bill doesn't like doing that. He would much rather fixate on whatever weird stuff is going on in Brady's unit. And everyone's like, Bill, I think you're just obsessed with Brady. Are you really? You think Brady might be psychic? You think Brady is psychic? That's silly, Bill.
It's basically impossible for someone to just develop psychic powers. What do you think about the intro for this season? Like the opening credits?
Where we have that Mississippi John Hurt song that plays while Bill just like visits Brady in the hospital over and over and over again.
It's not just any song.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that song is?
I Shall Not Be Moved, the African American spiritual.
Uh-huh. The like iconic civil rights song.
Yep.
Now, it's playing over a scene where Bill Hodges just looks at Brady as the like years go by and the seasons change behind him through the window. Do you think that they chose this song because it had lyrics about not moving from someplace?
I believe they did. That's my guess.
As opposed to its very, like, massively well-known context as a civil rights song about, you know, the kind of Christian uprightness of not being swayed from the civil rights movement?
Well, in a way, believing that Brady is psychic is like Bill Hodges' version of civil rights, I guess.
We're all not people around the world and nation are nodding sagely in their cars right
yep.
now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They have their AirPods in and they're nodding sagely. They're on the train. They're nodding sagely.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to me. It really like messed me up, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was an odd choice. Does feel kingy in the way of like, ah, this is clever, but like clever in the way where it's like, you didn't think about the other half of this.
Yeah, maybe you got to think about like all parts of the, you know, of the turkey.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. That's the range touch rule of writing anything is you got to think about all the parts of the turkey.
That's right. Big part, little part.
Mm-hmm.
Small part, tall part. That's all the parts of the turkey.
So yeah, Bill Hodges is like, damn, Brady's psychic, and it becomes undeniably clear that Brady is psychic. He doesn't really catch him in the act, I guess. I don't know. Like, as said, like, Brady wakes up, he does some other really wild things. That scene with him in the Goodwill is, it feels like it was ad-libbed in hell.
A lot of the scenes, there's a real, like, this is why I was asking in the beginning of the episode about, like, did the creative team change? And, like, if it sounds like Michael's bouncing around a little bit, you're not really. Because, like, the show is so unbelievably slow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whole episodes go by where nothing happens. Other than, like, people have a conversation. They have conversation number 9 about, is it okay to be injecting Brady with the brain drug?
Yeah.
And then we cut to inside of Brady's head, where he's got like a mind palace going on. He's like, he's in his basement from season 1, and he's looking out and he's going, I'm nuts. You know, like,
yeah.
I'm crazy out of an eerie comic.
Yep.
I'm EC Comics nuts. And you're like, all right, I guess this is something we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll like go back out, and then, oh, guess what? It's time for question 10. You know, instance 10 of, is it okay to inject him with the brain drug? Like, it keeps repeating itself over and over and over again. And then it will be punctuated by these scenes that feel like no one wrote anything.
Mm-hmm.
Every scene with, and shout out, like, Brendan Gleeson's like, director, is acting his ass off in a lot of these scenes. Because it, like, his ex-wife will be there and they'll just start talking, and it feels like a real conversation that is being made up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it feels like they're just saying stuff and yes-anding each other the whole time.
They have a weirdly believable chemistry as people with like a long history.
Yeah. And so they're just like, you remember the trip to Cabo? I do remember the trip to Cabo. Do you remember the dog in Cabo? Don't talk about that. You know, it's not that stuff. But it's like that level of like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And once Brady wakes up, the closer we get to the end of the season, the more of them there are. But yeah, Brady wakes up at one point and he like hobbles his way out of the... Actually, we got to go back one step. The evil Chinese pharmaceutical company.
Mm-hmm.
They're making him... Dr. Babineau. They're making him inject poor Brady with more brain drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel the people making the show going, oh, this audience is going to know way too much about when it's appropriate. You know, like what happens to someone in a coma?
Mm-hmm.
When is it appropriate for them to be able to get out of bed?
Oh, right, right. You know what I mean?
And so, like, you get to watch them jump through all these hoops around, like, why is he so strong? Well, they've been feeding him more.
Oh,
why is he able to walk out of the hospital? Well, guess what? 2 episodes ago, we watched him, like, in this automatic bicycle thing.
Yeah.
Building up his muscle strength. Like, you get to see this long train of, like,
I forgot about this
explanation
part.
For a thing no one, I don't need to explain. He's been getting the brain drug. And it's called like Cerebro or something.
It is something like that.
And so, yeah, we get to see him like in a coma in the like, I don't know, like the human ambulator wiggling all of his things around to build up his muscle mass, which is true, right? Like, yes, like that's all real stuff, right?
Yeah.
But that is so not a thing that the show needs to worry itself with, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, and so then all of this, so he can go to a Goodwill to put together a disguise, and then he gets caught in a conversation with an overly attentive Goodwill employee who thinks he's a doctor, because when he ran away from the hospital, he put on a lab coat. And so he like leans into this ruse, like saying that he's a doctor, like just, you know, taking a break from the hospital and dropping by the Goodwill. And they've done his makeup such that he looks like a vampire. Like, he's pale, he's got bulging bug eyes, and the employee is entirely clueless throughout this whole thing, as he just like, and it feels ad-libbed, like he's just making up these bizarre lies to explain what he's doing and how he like needs to he has to like get a hat or something again because he's like building a disguise. And I was watching it. I'm like, what is this? Like, how does, like, is this? I hope this is in the book.
What do you think about his accent he's doing?
He's doing a accent. He has a doctor's voice.
I didn't note this. I can't figure out where the hell this is in my notes.
It's in like episode 7, maybe.
That seems about right.
Past the halfway point for sure. I do like that basically everyone who is not American in the show has just given up.
Yeah.
He's English like a full third of the time. And we're all just like, okay, fine.
Whatever. Yeah, it's fine. It is fine. Brain explosion. Why did I write that down?
Did that happen?
I don't know.
Was there a brain explosion?
I don't know. I wrote down brain explosion. So. But anyway, yeah, so that's the sort of thing that Brady is getting up to. Yeah, that's his entire plot line, by the way, is for most of these 10 episodes, he is in a coma, but also not in a coma, but pretending to be in a coma because really he's in his mind palace looking at the world through 3 different computer screens. And he has found out that he can psychically control a particular nurse as well as the good-hearted man with an intellectual disability who pushes the library cart around the unit when he volunteers.
Library Al.
Library Al. So he does all sorts of mischief with this. The nurse ends up being dead. So does Al, actually, and other people die through that cause, whatever. And then Lou comes in. Actually, so, and then also, like, Babineau and his wife are constantly, as you said, they're doing just the constant conversations of like, oh my gosh, should we be giving him these hormones? Yes, I love giving him these hormones. It makes me so aroused and ready to have your baby. I would love to have your baby, Felix Babineau. Put more chemicals into that man. Just over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, really just saying the stuff that happens in the show is pretty wild. Now that I'm really getting down to brass tacks on this issue, put the chemicals in the evil man so you can put the baby in me, Felix Babineau. Yeah, you want to talk about that, about her, like, the relationship between them is like an erotic medical thriller.
Yeah.
And she, you know, my very brave wife watched some of this with me. I think her tolerance for Mr. Mercedes is basically zero.
Mm-hmm.
Just across the board, just none, you know? And I do believe she said, and this is as near a direct quote, this is not language I would normally use, but when Dr. Babineau's evil wife,
mm-hmm.
Pharmaceutical Babineau,
mm-hmm.
which is
that was her name. Yep.
that's my character from the Crying of Lot 49. Pharmaceutical Babineau. Yeah. When she is on screen at one point and there's a place where she's pregnant, right? She's like, she's masturbating on
yes.
the bed to like lure him upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's real. Like we're on a streaming television show,
uh-huh.
buddy. And all this stuff is happening. And then she's like, "Why don't you look over there on the on the table?" And he goes and gets on the table. It's a pregnancy test, and it's positive. And he's like, "Oh my God, you're pregnant?" And she says, "Yes, I am." And they have like this back and forth, and she's like, you gotta give, in the middle of this conversation, she's like, you gotta give Brady more of the brain drug, yes. Dr. Babineau, you have to do it. And he's this pharmaceutical Babineau. I can't, I'll get, you know, removed. They'll fire me. They'll move him, all this stuff. And then she says something like, you better have sex with me right now, buddy, while I'm pregnant, because tomorrow I might not be. And my very brave wife turned to me and she said, I love this evil bitch. Because it's truly, it's like, absolute off the wall. It's also EC Comics.
Yes.
Madness, you know what I mean? But she's just like at 11 like that, the whole program. It's really fun.
It's so wild.
She's like lasciviously whispering to Brady to bring him out of a coma.
Uh-huh. She's like, oh, like, yeah, she's like talking about how handsome he is. Like, this is just, yeah, like that. That's her orientation toward the world, is she really wants, she wants these drugs to work. And so she's going to dirty talk a comatose man.
If you're not, you know what? Jonas Salk would have dirty talked a comatose man for the polio vaccine. We all know it.
Yeah.
But sorry, I just want to give some contour to that. So you were talking about, what were you talking about before?
Oh, that most of Brady's story is like him in his head, but like doing mischief, like figuring out how he can control people, like sexually assaulting the nurse that he can mind control through her own body when he takes over her, for instance. And she's also... That's like a weird parallel that's happening here that I don't know what to do with, because is she trying to get pregnant, or she is just getting pregnant? She has just gotten pregnant because she has stopped taking her medication for her epilepsy, which thing that lets Brady mind control her.
Yeah, I knew there was something involved with the medication, because there's the conversation she has with her like husband and all that stuff, or boyfriend, whatever
yeah.
it is,
mm-hmm.
where they're like yelling at one another.
Right.
I couldn't remember exactly what it was about, but yeah. Yeah, it's what makes her uniquely vulnerable to be mind controlled. Are is it just the two of them that he can mind control? Do we have a reason for that?
So for her, it's pretty clearly the like trance state brought on by the side effects of stopping her epilepsy medication.
Oh.
For Al, it is this very problematic combination of the fact, I think, that he has an intellectual disability, and then like something that happens to him when he uses the little tablets. Like, I mean, it's what the it doesn't say these words, but what the thing is gesturing to is the gaming flow state that playing that little fishing game puts him in.
It makes you uniquely vulnerable to mind control from an evil serial killer.
Yes.
We should have covered this in Game Study Buddies.
I had that thought. I was like, oh man, here's like double where dip. We're converging.
Yeah. Who is the actor that plays Al? Doesn't he like play these kinds of characters fairly regularly?
I don't know about that. I know he, and I looked him up too, because he's so familiar. He plays sort of like criminals a lot. Like, and he is typecast in that way, right? He plays like this. He looks like a guy that Tony Soprano would hang out with.
Oh, he plays the guy who in the cut scene, the scene that's now been cut out of the most recent edition of Miller's Crossing. He's like the big lunk.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Because there's like the little guy and the big guy.
Yes.
And he's the guy where he goes in there. It's I don't know if you know this, but apparently in the most recent release that happened through Criterion of Miller's Crossing, there's a joke in that movie where the main character, right? The big guy comes in. He's going to like do something to the main character, going to beat him up or something. Mm-hmm. And the main character just clocks him right in the face.
Yeah.
And then he leaves, and the little guy comes in and just like sucker punches him. We cut on the sucker punch. And I believe in the most recent edition, that whole thing is cut out.
Weird. Why?
Yeah. Because it's like a slapstick bit in the middle.
Huh.
Yeah.
I like that movie with the slapstick bit.
I like the slapstick bit. People can confirm if that's true or not. But yeah, Mike Starr is this guy's name.
Yeah, Mike Starr. I actually think he's probably most familiar to me as the guy from Dumb and Dumber.
He's like the evil villain in Dumb and Dumber, right?
I believe he's the guy that they kill him with rat poison by accident.
Not the guy they defraud. Not that kid they defraud with the dead bird.
No, not he does not play the kid that they defraud with the dead bird.
That movie's maybe cruel.
A little bit. A little
bit.
You
remember when we went to the famous shooting location of Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah. Together? Uh-huh.
For this very show?
Yep. Mm-hmm. We had a great time there.
Stanley Hotel? We did. We should have dressed up in the suits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Next time. We'll do a 10-year anniversary episode of that event, and we'll go and we'll dress up in the suits. He apparently it was an episode of Adam Ruins Everything. Isn't that fun?
That is fun. Was born in Flushing, Queens to a retail employee mother and a meatpacker father.
You think that's why he's allowed to play these kinds of roles?
Quotes, I get a lot of calls for New York-oriented things, mob parts, cop roles. I think they stereotype me by size. That's a bit of a pitfall. Some people bring me in for the big gentle guy or these killers. It's hard to figure out what they think of me. Trademark, tough bullying characters.
His trademark is that?
That's, yeah, according to the Did You Know section of...
He's getting the
label on these experimental hormones that I'm, yeah.
He's like, I don't want to be typecast. It kind of sucks. And then IMDb itself typecasts it.
Follows it up with trademark being typecast.
Damn. It's hard out there for an actor. I got empathy for him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, he mind controls him and he goes and murders a dog about it.
Mm-hmm. Lou, who's been having her own entire plot line throughout this whole thing, she eventually shows up kind of with the plan to kill Brady while he is in a coma. Mm-hmm.
I think the second person in the show planning to do that.
Yes. After Bill Hodges.
Yep.
And she doesn't do that, but it does, like, for whatever reason, that's the thing that prompts Brady, I think, to eventually get out of bed and try to make his escape. He takes the Babineaux hostage, and then eventually, this is after he has the weird scene in the Goodwill where he assembles his disguise and all that stuff.
This is also my Manchurian Candidate activation phrase. He takes the Babineaux hostage.
He takes the Babineaux hostage and he's like, I'm going to kill you because I'm a serial killer and I'm psychic now. And they're like, ha, but you didn't realize that the hormones that we've given you, you're dependent on them now. And
it's exactly the flowers for Algernon drug.
And so if you don't get regular doses of it, you will just straight up die, friend. And guess who is your only link to this cool experimental hormone that you need to live? It's us. So you need to play ball.
Dr. Babineaux himself. Mm-hmm. That devious villain. Yeah, because he's going to like get full of tumors or something.
Yes.
That seems bad.
It does. And so he ends up like making a deal with them that he will like kind of, you know, he will both go to trial for his crimes and be kind of their like charming test case for the efficacy of this drug on the condition that they go with his I regrew my brain, so I'm a different person defense. And he tries it.
Yeah. Which in the I'm a different person defense is he is not fit to stand trial. He is not fit to aid in his own defense.
Right.
Because he's a different guy now.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this really, I guess I don't hope it really works in real life. But I think I'd find it delightful if it did. You know, because it doesn't seem like it's useful in like any kind of positive way.
No.
You know, mm-hmm. But it's the kind of thing where you're like, you know, the ref should have called it, but they missed it. Mm-hmm. So
I'm a different guy now. They just didn't catch it.
They just didn't catch it. And then, yeah, it becomes like this courtroom drama
mm-hmm.
for two episodes. Until so Bill Hodges continues to recede even further. He's like mm-hmm. trying to pick up his ex-wife.
Yeah. Apparently, she had one scene, maybe a couple scenes in the previous season. So we should recognize her. We just didn't because we're bad.
I definitely didn't. Yeah. I don't. Sorry. apology to Mr. Mercedes lovers out there.
Like, I didn't even recognize her as, like, Nancy Travis, returning Kingiverse player. I only recognized her that far this time.
Yeah. I obviously I didn't get there. But Bill Hodges is, like, way off on his own thing. And someone who's even further off on their own thing is Holly Gibney. Who people keep telling me is like Stephen King's beloved OC. Like, uh-huh. I've been told that for years. No evidence of it so far.
Yeah, she just sort of hangs around. She gets angsty about Bill. She has a much easier time doing the tough jobs than he does in a way that gives her trouble. She goes to coffee dates with another guy with, well, I don't know if he has... It's clear here that she has like obsessive compulsive disorder of some kind. And there's, I think, some amount of autism. And then there's like some other guy that she's meeting with from like a support group that she was in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like group therapy.
Yeah. Thing. And so she's like continually meeting him and just, the show's like, Holly, you need to grow up and live your life. You need to be a young woman now and have friends. Again, I think of what you pointed out the previous bonusode on the first season, is that it is ultimately so much more interesting if you take Holly as she is in the books, which is she's already like, she's fine. She's like in her 40s.
Yeah. She's like an adult woman in her 40s who like experiences seemingly extreme depression.
Yes.
And that seems bad. And is treated very poorly by people. That's bad too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, you know, doesn't have the same set of things going on.
Right.
As this Holly Gibney.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically what Holly's doing.
What about Jerome?
I told you Jerome is vaping while driving.
I know.
That's how that's how you know he's disenchanted.
He's disenchanted.
He's His hacked Harvard.
Sorry, I was going to bring up his dad. So Jerome comes back and it's like maybe a third of the way through the season. And Jerome comes back and everyone's like, so Jerome is back. Jerome is back. Yeehaw, Jerome is back. All the stuff. They go to his like, I'm back from a semester at Harvard party or a year, whatever it is. And we know because he's vaping. Mm-hmm. We know he's having a bad time.
Yes. And he got a 4.0 at Harvard. That's part of the reason there's a party.
That's right. And so they say, I want to see your report card. And he's like, those don't exist in college. The ultimate maneuver, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, okay, well, show us whatever you got. And then we cut to seemingly hours later.
Uh-huh.
He's vaping in his room.
Yep.
And he's editing his, like, report card of classes such as, like, American bibliography or something. You're like, all right, someone on this crew really did go to Harvard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Eight classes.
But he's straight up just on his laptop. He's like got his grades pulled up and he's just hacked Harvard. He's just changing his grades in the system.
Oh, yeah. He's got their ass completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. You think he's changing the grades in the system or you think he's just changing his grades like on the document? He's like editing a PDF.
I don't know. I guess he's editing the PDF because he seems to, I mean, he's quite disenchanted.
He is. He doesn't want to go back. He's experiencing, it's really funny that there's a show that just won't say the word microaggression, but that is what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't like being at Harvard because it turns out that being a working class black kid at Harvard means that a lot of people approach him with a lot of weird ideas about who he is and the role that he plays in their lives.
Yeah, people are saying like, yo, homie to him and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Not cool.
So he does not want to do this. He's vaping while driving. This is how you can tell he's feeling bad. He's feeling aimless. He's changed his style a little. It is funny that in the books, Jerome has gotten slightly better, but at the same time, like he's such just a fictional character. Like, I don't know anyone who is like Jerome as he is written by Stephen King. But the beauty of television is that if you make this character, like, you give me an actor and you give him like some clothes, it's like, oh, okay, like, I know who Jerome is now. Like, I've met guys like Jerome.
He could be a guy,
right? Like, he's it's like, oh, okay, he's wearing like a football club jersey. It's like, oh, okay, I know, okay, I got a better sense of like who you are as a type of guy now. You're listening to Eminem. There's a point later where he's very angry and he's listening to Eminem. It's like, okay.
All right. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Weirdly enough, he ends up in kind of a situation that like seems to be lifted from the situation of Pete in the book, where he's like, he and his sister have this kind of conversation where, he feels really bad, partly because his father works so hard to, get him this far and get him to school and all this stuff. And I don't know what his father's business is, but it's not doing well. And so he feels even worse about feeling like he's wasting his time at Harvard. And he's got this sister who also needs to be taken care of. Oh, this is the other big piece of Jerome information that is unique to this show that comes up that we learn here. His mother took her own life. She like, that's not true in the books. In the book, she's still there. She's a character. Here, there's no mom in the picture, and we learn it is because she killed herself when Jerome was like in high school or something. And so that's also like part of what's going on here. More to what you were saying about everyone just needs to get beefed up.
We gotta give them something.
Yep.
Because otherwise they're just there. You can't just be there in a book, you know?
Yep.
What would they do? Just stand around? So we have, and yeah, then it just becomes like they get shunted off, Jerome and Holly. Mm-hmm.
Jerome builds a gazebo.
One of the inciting, this is how you know that they're like, oh shit, we don't have enough for these characters to do. At the very beginning of the show, a comical CGI tree falls through Bill Hodges' neighbor's gazebo.
Mm-hmm.
And it signifies progress throughout the whole show that they slowly but surely build the gazebo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. They build the gazebo. And then, like, Jerome comes up with this really, like, I just think there's something noble about working with your hands.
Yeah.
And then they, like, kick him and Holly off into their own show, like, entirely.
Mm-hmm.
They're in their own detective show. Occasionally, Bill Hodges goes to them. It's like what, you know, we talked about in the book, that at the end of both of the Bill Hodges books we read so far, it just turns into people driving around and like monologuing each other in a car about what's happening outside of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in the show too, except it's them in the Chinese restaurant and then Bill Hodges calling them on the phone.
Yes. They're like, we've got the latest information, Bill.
And they do have the latest information. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
But no one cares. And it's not that important. They go, so that's all happening. And really and truly, there is no resolution to anything we have talked about in this whole episode.
Nope.
Except for Lou's story. I guess that is.
Yeah. Resolved. Yeah. It's for a term or a given understanding of resolved, like it is an endpoint. It could be an endpoint. Cause she's got this like in all of this, like, when we cut to this person and here's what they're doing, and we cut to this person, here's what they're doing. Sometimes we cut to Lou, a character whom no one else in the show interacts with at all.
Bill goes and talks to her one time
later on. Cause before that we see her like crash out hard with her girlfriend.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. We like go through that whole thing. She gets word that there's like rumors that Brady is maybe regaining consciousness or something. And this causes her to pull the trigger and finally get that tattoo that she's been wanting to get, which is, it's not her first tattoo for the record. I believe she has others that are visible, but she gets a kind of big tattoo and it's set up like the artist is like, man, you've been coming in here every day for a week or whatever. Thinking about this particular tattoo, and then she gets it and she goes home to show it off to her girlfriend. And it's just like a tricycle on her, kind of like on her abdomen, I would say, like, you know, kind of like near the abdominals. And her girlfriend is not impressed.
Well, it's over the stab wound.
Oh, that's it. It is over the stab
wound. It's taking the stab wound and turning it into a goofy tricycle.
Yes. Which is... I think it was... Like, I could not believe that this ended up making sense.
Does the tricycle make sense?
Yes, because it happens... And it's right because it happens in like episode 3 and it's just like, what on earth? Like, of all the, like, I get like maybe covering over the stab wound or whatever, but like with a child's tricycle, what? And then many episodes later, sometime around like episode 8 or 9. Oh, no, apparently it's episode 6, so it's sooner than that. But Lou ends up having a kind of I don't remember who she's talking to. Maybe it's when she's talking to Bill, or she tells the story of when she was a kid, she was in the foster system, and she was placed with a couple who gave her a red tricycle. And she really, really liked it. But then that couple got beaten up by another couple who then took the tricycle. And it turned out that the tricycle was like that man's child's tricycle that her foster father had stolen. So also there's a weird parallel here of the Bill Hodges repossession stuff for question mark reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was like... Lou has her Citizen Kane moment, right? Where the tricycle becomes... the sort of emblem for all of the good things she never got to have, right? Because they never really got to belong, like, they never really belonged to her. So she's trying to take charge of her life, and instead her girlfriend thinks that she's a mess. She picks up another girl at a bar. She ends up just beating the shit out of a guy who harasses them. And then she gets arrested. And
a lot of people get beat up. Bill Hodges gets beat up.
Yep. You know, she gets arrested. Her girlfriend bails her out. And she's like, clean up your act. I'm leaving this city or whatever. And then she joins us for the legal drama at the end, because she is the person who, as the person who knew Brady before this, right, and was also a victim of his, she is the person who the court would trust to make the judgment about whether or not he's a new person.
That's right.
Well, we can talk.
She makes that determination.
Yeah, she makes the hell out of it.
You were going to say something else?
Oh, I was going to say, do we want to talk about this, or do we want to talk about the other incident to end it with the ending? We can talk about the other incidental character who shows up, who we totally forgot to mention, but who followers on Blue Sky might recognize from the clip that I posted from.
What's his name? Montez or something?
Yes. Yes. His name is Montez. We do get a Tony Montez. He's not the DA, but he works for the DA's office and he wants to be DA. So also, like, this type of crime novel is happening too, right? He wants to be able to prosecute Brady for the Mr. Mercedes killings, because he believes that if he does do that, then that will make his reputation, and then he will be able to step up to DA. And so he is also breathing down Babineau's neck about trying to make him he also is invested in, like, Brady revivifying, right? But then during one of his early scenes, while he's alone in the room with Brady, he grabs his testicles and squeezes them really hard to see if, I mean, to torture him, but also, like, to see if he can wake him up or whatever. And then later on, yeah,
everyone wants to be like, I think I could do something really painful to Brady to wake him up. I think I could do it.
It's like a recurring thing. It's like when a Homestuck character gets introduced and you have to look around their room, like a character shows up in this season of Mr. Mercedes and they've got to do something to the comatose Brady to see if they can wake him up.
And he keeps being like, I'm not unconscious. I'm just paralyzed.
He squeezes his balls is what he does, and then he confesses this very frankly to Bill Hodges several episodes later in a scene that is simply baffling to experience, because that is what he did. Yeah. And to have him just so frankly describe it is, I mean, the show trusts you. It trusts you to know what you saw and to hear adults talk about it.
You've never been more right, I gotta tell you. Because he's just like, I gotta tell you,
mm-hmm.
I squeezed his balls.
Yeah, he said privately, just he and I in the room. And I'm not proud to admit it, but I squeezed the fuck out of his balls.
That's right.
And then Bill Hodges just looks at him.
Well, he looks at him in this like shocked face, yes, that I really love. He really sells the like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And like that. So like everyone who comes in and tries to kill Brady, which is like three people, or torture him, I guess. It's proven to have been a mistake, I think, every time, right?
Yeah.
I guess not for Lou. Or for the other two, because it looks like Bill Hodges might like go down for it.
Yeah. You know? Oh, right. Because, yeah, we get the scene where, oh, Bill, you've been withholding evidence, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we forgot to talk about Bill's partner who just up and dies.
We did.
Bill's partner dies.
Bill's partner dies unceremoniously in order to give some stakes to like what's happening in the show.
Yeah.
You know what the worst thing would be? I mean, it's so damn funny because it's like he spends two episodes or a whole episode or something being like, you know, I'm just one day from retirement. I can't wait to retire tomorrow. You know, it'd sure be a shame if I died.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then he just has a heart attack on Bill's kitchen floor.
What a bad way to go.
Yeah.
Really makes you think about ways you don't want to die.
Yeah. Not on Bill Hodges' floor. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're bringing Brady to trial. They have Lou testify. She comes out. She gives her, you know, talk. She gives her, says her piece. She leaves the stand, and then she whips a 3D printed gun out of her shirt and she shoots Brady in the head.
It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen in a television show.
It's great.
If I've sounded a little negative about this season, it's because I was.
Mm-hmm.
Really negative about this season until the last 10 minutes of it when Lou whipped out a Luigi gun.
Yep.
And shot
a doohickey.
And just blasts him with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just gets him.
Yep.
Shoots him right in the face. And it's so funny, too, because in the same way that the coma stuff, they just like belabor all this like science that no one gives a shit about.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason, they like cut to like a news footage thing. It's like, and the whole thing was printed and the bullets were ceramic.
Uh-huh.
And so they could not find it with the metal detector.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you're talking to my father-in-law right now. Like the guy, yes, who can't get over this information.
And word on the street is it was Brady himself who first taught her how to use a 3D printer.
That's cool. That's a cool thing to learn.
Yeah.
It's kind of messed up that they don't give her credit for just knowing how to use a 3D printer. Not that complicated.
It all has to be about Brady's story and the irony. You see, evil defeats itself, Cameron.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Evil defeats its enemies evil defeats itself by teaching its enemies to use a 3D printer.
I forgot about that. I forgot that Randall Flagg taught all those. Yes. Taught the trash can man how to use a 3D printer. That's on me.
Yep.
Forgetting that occurred. My bad. And then
at the end of The Shining, the Overlook forgot that it had routed all of the power to the 3D printer.
It creeps.
Yeah.
3D printing. Yep. It creeps on 3D printing, you know? And then season over.
Yep.
One of the greatest endings to anything ever done.
Yep.
No more. It's just done.
Yeah. We end on Bill painting his tortoise in the yard. I did like his line where, and I think this is maybe a conversation that he's having with Lou. He says that he got the tortoise because they're talking about dogs. And he said at some point you get a dog and you know it's the last dog you're ever going to have, right? Because it's the dog that's going to outlive you. So that's why he got a tortoise, because it would be the one that outlived him.
Yeah, so you never have to worry about it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think there's some good writing in him. I like hearing Brendan Gleeson do his thing. I think something that's really interesting is, like, it feels to me as if this creative team and the people who were working on the show didn't really think there'd be more than one season.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the whole thing just kind of feels cashed out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how that's going to feel in the next season.
Yeah. Especially if, like, I am corrected my surmise here, and that this order was done so that there could be, you know, theoretically many more seasons after this. One problem that I can see right off the bat is Mr. Mercedes is dead.
Yeah, so what are they going to do about that?
I don't know.
Mr. Season 3 is Mr. Mercedes in memoriam.
It is kind of wild that they went with calling it Mr. Mercedes and didn't just call it, like, the Bill Hodges Adventures or something.
I mean, I got to tell you, that makes it feel like they only planned for that one season.
Yeah. But it was announced because that first three seasons at once.
Did they?
Or, I mean, actually, maybe they erred on the side of caution, because I think they had rights for all three seasons. Mm. And so they probably locked it in on one, went with Mr. Mercedes for the name recognition. And then they were stuck with it.
Yeah, because no one knows who Bill Hodges is.
Right.
Even though he's a famous detective. I think it's great. I mean, I think that for the most part, the season is not very good until the very end. In that instance, it's one of my favorite things we watched.
Yeah, it was great.
It's just so out of nowhere.
Yep.
And there's a really good thing, too, around... I mean, there's some, I think we're selling it a little bit short here because it's mostly kind of annoying. But in the non-annoying part, I think there's a cool thing to think about, which is, I think there's a real opening for Brady to be a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might not be an act. He might literally be a different guy. Do you think that's true?
I mean, I don't think so. But I do think that is what is interesting about the show, is that it will play with that, because it's just so clear. Well, I don't know. I guess I haven't read the third book. Who knows how that goes? But, like, the Brady, we talked about this in the first season, even there, that, like, the show was interested in making room for Brady to be something like a little bit more, even if he doesn't take that path. Like, I mean, that's why Lou's here anyway, because I don't even remember what her character was called in the book. They changed her name for this, but I remember Lou. Because the character is just a pure, like, side character, supporting, set dressing. She's just there, right? She's someone for Brady to have uncharitable thoughts about in the book. And then the first season expands that character so much and spends so much time on her relationship with Brady, that the coolest thing about this season, cashing out her relationship with Brady, is a thing that's just not present in the books. In a way that I don't know what that bodes for the future for either of these things.
Yeah, and, like, what was this taking the place of in the book?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, what's actually happening? I don't know. I haven't started it yet. Have you?
I have not, no, because I'm reading the short stories.
Oh, that's right.
Which raises a good question. What are we going to be watching next month? Because none of those short stories have been adapted to anything.
None of them?
None of them.
Wow.
None at all.
Well,
so
what we got on the spreadsheet?
I have at least two ideas here. One could be we just watch Rose Red. because I mentioned Nancy Travis. We watched that miniseries. The other idea that I'll pitch here is we do need to watch Regit seasons 1 and 2 before we watch Kingdom Hospital. And then, of course, watch Regit season 3. But if we do the first series of Regit, then we could, like, I've laid it out. I don't know if you have the spreadsheet handy. I've laid it out here. We could knock those out like in an alternating order with the next couple things.
I think Regit needs to be its own Patreon sub series.
Okay.
I think just going Regit mode for just King Things might be a little bit of a far walk for some folks.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
But they will want to hear about Kingdom Hospital. And I won't want to.
They will.
I might have to end up holding Kingdom Hospital for a bonus-ode of the Patreon Regit series.
That's what I'm saying. This might end up being like a sub-series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
okay.
In that case.
I'm fair with. Yeah.
I think Rose Red's a good idea.
Let's do Rose Red then. Let's make
also
sure.
It's not like 25 episodes of television.
Yes, that's also good. Now come on, like Regit is like it's only 4 episodes, but each episode is like 4 hours long or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But no, I don't know how that works.
I think we do Regit as like a summer series over on the Patreon as a standalone thing.
Yeah.
We just knock that all out in one whack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Regit's great.
Yes, it is.
It's okay. Really something. It was so good, Stephen King had to watch it. You know, or had to adapt it, had to rip it off.
Uh-huh.
He said, Lars, I'm coming. I think they ever met.
I mean, I bet they had like at least one little like glancing meeting or something. I think Steve would be down for it. I don't know about Lars. I don't know what Lars's opinion on that would be.
Yeah, I don't know what his Stephen King opinion, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, apparently Rose Red is streaming on Hulu.
Yeah, I think it's been on Hulu like forever.
Cool.
Yeah. Easy. I got DVDs. I'm watching them.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that's what we'll be watching. Neat. Haunted houses. Hooray.
And it doesn't have... It's not adaptive. It's a wholly original screenplay. Right?
Yes, this is. It is the last of the novel for television experiments. Mm. I guess the second and last, because I guess the first one was Storm of the Century.
Yeah, there's not. Yeah, I guess there.
There's a tie-in book that was written by I think Ridley Pearson. Maybe that's not particularly good.
Oh, so it got like adapted.
It's it is presented as the diary of one of the women who lives in the haunted house.
Oh.
And basically cool. It fills out the lore of the movie in some ways that are perhaps didn't need to be filled in quite as explicitly as they are.
Some Secret Life of Laura Palmer stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little bit like that.
Trying to think of other. There's been several of these. Kind of the novelization of Mortal Kombat.
Did they make it a like diary of someone in the movie?
No, I wish it were.
That would have been so funny.
The diary of Shao Kahn.
Yes. Like the what a way to novelize a film to like make it an epistolary novel from the perspective of one of the characters.
No, I've been watching... God, what's the evil wizard's name? I've been watching him from Outworld, I believe. Shang Tsung.
Yeah.
I've been watching Shang Tsung from Outworld. I believe he's not advocating for my position very well. I think I'll have to kill these warriors myself. I've been watching this Johnny Blaze on my Earth Realm television. Ah, Johnny Blaze. I mean, we got a little bit of time. You want to try to do a Q&A question?
Oh, yeah.
We said we'd do one per episode, and we just haven't.
Yeah, no. We get caught up in our lives. Let's pull up the question sewer. If you want to send a question to us for the question sewer, for the Q&A episodes, or for what I'm getting ready to do right now, you can send them to I'm on the wrong computer to be logged into that email address. I don't remember if it's the. Is there a the in there?
I don't know.
I'm talking out loud, Cameron. I'm processing.
I know.
I'm processing.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm just affirming you. I don't know.
It is the question sewer, all one word, at gmail.com. So let's pull open this email and see who we got here. I'll let you choose here, Cameron. Okay. Do you want to know something about Bachman? Do you want to know something about Pokemon? Do you want to know something about a reading list? Or do you want to know something about Wilmington, North Carolina?
Oh, Wilmington, North Carolina, every time.
Okay, so let's see here. Ryan writes in, hello, my wife and I moved to Wilmington a few years ago, and we're interested to learn that many movies and TV shows have been filmed there. I've been especially intrigued with your deep dive into the Wilmington film scene as created by Dino De Laurentiis and Stephen King's adaptations. I was wondering if you had found any particularly interesting books on the history of, quote, Filmington. So, and then Ryan says, looks forward to catching up with other podcasts. Interested in Too Much Future. Quote, I worked as a designer on Fallout 4. Cool.
Cool.
Hey, thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah.
Wasn't my favorite one of them, but it's not a bad game.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite.
There were things in there I had a lot of fun with.
You like clomping around, mm-hmm. New England? No, the answer is no.
Okay.
Yeah. I've read some books about, I for whatever reason, I'm sure there are books about it. You know, like this is not me. I did not do a comprehensive deep dive on this. I mostly read about the Wilmington stuff because Wilmington seems to have a pretty good tourism world for this kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of like bloggy writing about it from the last 15, 20 years, which is pretty neat. I read a lot of magazine articles from the time. I did some like library searching to read about when De Laurentiis took the studio there and everything. I didn't dig a book in the world of stuff I know about like the tax credit film universe. I'd never, like in my academic studies, I'd never took anything that went back as far as North Carolina. For the most part, the stuff I took classes on talked as far back as it went was when Louisiana did the tax credits in the early 2000s. So I don't have a thing.
Okay. Are there any good books about like filmmaking under tax credits that you would point out as like, if it's about Louisiana?
Not off the dome, but I can go back and look.
I don't know. I was just curious if I didn't know. Sometimes being a Shakespearean or whatever the hell I am, it's
a cool guy.
It's such a cool guy. It can be hard for me to know sometimes how things work in film studies. Whereas, you know, it is just like, so the odds are so in your favor if you want a book that's like Shakespeare and blah, right? Just like the thing you want to know about, how does that relate to Shakespeare? That thing exists. So, you know, I don't know if in film studies, it's like, oh yeah, everyone, when they want to talk about film credits, they reference this landmark work from so-and-so.
I don't think so, but maybe, you know, that's just not my part of the discipline too.
Yeah.
You know, like anytime I'm over there, it's because I'm an interloper trying to learn about something else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is more documentation around the Louisiana tax credits, partially because film industry studies was like really ripping and rolling by the time that happened. So.
Oh, yeah. I guess if this stuff was happening, the 80s is kind of an interesting time for film studies academically, too. They're still like making a case, really.
Yeah, they're like, yeah.
Like
they're like fighting over stuff.
Yes, right. That's what I mean. Like, oh my God, you want us to give you a funded position so you can go research a film industry in North Carolina that's making Stephen King adaptations?
Right. It's just not really and also like theory still going on at that time is like a dominant paradigm. And so a lot of fights in the 90s and early 2000s that happened around film and media studies, and other people might characterize this differently, but to my mind is a lot of like who gets to own doing film work after theory's over,
you know?
And I think industry studies kind of won that fight. Maybe they don't think that way, but as a theory person, I think they did. So, and also I'm not in film studies. You know what I mean? I did a lot of coursework in there, and I've read a lot of the work, and I've written about film and took a bunch of film classes in grad school, but I'm a comm studies person. So.
Mm-hmm. An uncool person is that's what, right. Only cool right. people become Shakespeareans.
That's right. And only the coolest people become early modernists.
That's right. I'm a comparativist, baby.
Bow, 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 bow. Boom, 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 boom. You got another question?
I gave you our topics. I guess you picked one. I'll pick the next. Cameron, do you remember on, I think, the last Question Sewer episode, we had gotten someone writing in. Someone wrote in, they work in an airport. And they were talking about how, like, the, you know, like, Stephen King always gets, like, reprints of previous novels. It seems to happen.
And so, like, it was about, like, what, how many of certain books were showing up. And, like, the older books showing up and all that stuff. I do remember that question.
Yeah. So Thinner apparently, you know, sold zero copies and so on and so forth. The books we're required to carry, this is from the previous email, often have some mysterious to me publishing deal at work. It's why you see so many self-help hardcovers when you stop in the $20 airport or stop in for $20 airport trail mix. But why is everybody so anxious to reclaim and redistribute the Bachmans all of a sudden? Right. So the Bachmans were like coming back real big. Mm-hmm. So this person writes,
I think I speculated, but they like everything had been reissued recently with new covers.
Yeah. Writing and saying mass market paperbacks are going away. ReaderLink, quote, the largest distributor of books to non-trade channel booksellers in North America, will stop distributing them at the end of 2025. So still being published because a company has a monopoly on their natural habitat. Those like mass market airport things, I guess, are going away. The question to us then, the hot new book publishing trend is trade paperbacks with sprayed edges. These are most often applied to the romantasy genre. So an example might be a book with the sides of its pages printed with flowers and swords. If you could pick any Stephen King book to release as a sprayed edge paperback, which ones would you pick and what would be the pattern design?
I think they're already out. I think there's a Carrie copy. I think I saw it in the bookstore the other day.
Really? What is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it's Carrie.
Yeah.
I think that's the one I saw. Maybe I just saw a promo for it. Maybe I didn't actually see it. Yeah, I've actually bought a couple of these. Not seeking out the sprayed edges because I don't have any opinion on them. They feel like the new, like, uncut edges. You remember how uncut edges were for hardcovers, like, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Where it was, like, the sign of, like, something interesting going on. It just feels like that happening. Again, I got a copy of Tremblay's book.
Paul Tremblay.
Like, a haunted movie.
Uh-huh. I don't know if that's right, but also it could be.
I think it's about a haunted movie. I bought a copy. I got a cheap copy of it because I was curious about it. It has like sprayed black edges to it. So yeah, I think romantasy and horror are like the only two places I've seen it so far.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe no fantasy too, I guess, like straight fantasy. There's like a Game of Thrones sprayed edges copy, I think, too.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, there's some like first edition chasing scarcity culture thing going on with it too, of like,
right.
I think some books only their first edition is getting sprayed edges, so you got to pre-order.
So that's like one of the things that is sort of speculated upon here, that because King already has this like deep bench of mass market like reprints ready to go, that's one of the reasons, like, as that style of book is being sunsetted, apparently, just kind of like, you know, get the Stephen King out the door. We got it. It's enough. Now we need to get fancy things with sprayed edges.
It's interesting. You want a spray edged book? What would be your ideal spray edged book?
Of a Stephen King specifically?
No, of any book.
Of any book. Any book.
Any book on the earth.
Any book on the earth.
Or in heaven.
Or any book in heaven. My spray edge edition of God's Diary.
It's like an hour by hour diary. Yes. Really disturbing to look at.
Like the first couple pages, just like darkness, darkness, darkness.
That's good. That's funny.
Yeah. No, I
said,
think...
let there be light. Darkness.
I think
looked out upon the water, looked out upon the deep.
Good. I think a very fun occasion for doing sprayed edges would be some sort of edition of Tristram Shandy. Sorry to give such an obnoxious answer here.
Jesus Christ.
If I could have a really nicely printed Tristram Shandy edition with like sprayed edges, I would have that.
You know what? I'll send you, you know, that what's the name of that book company that just makes like really high end volumes to like be behind you on a shelf? And they're not meant to be read, really.
Do you mean the place that like does like genre stuff?
No, not Folio Society.
Not Folio Society. Okay. I don't know who
some
you're talking
are very
about
down on. I'm perfectly fine. My only beef with Folio Society, as we've talked about before on the show, is that I ordered a damn book from Folio Society and it came dinged up to high heaven. You know what? You've reminded me. I promised I'd give that to somebody and I forgot. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this very week. No, it's like, no, they've been around for a long time. It's like leather bound or like pseudo. It looks like leather bound and it's like all the classics.
Okay. All right. I know the type of thing you're talking about, at least.
Yeah. I'm sure there's more than one person doing it. But I actually got one in a used bookstore the other day for like $1 of Tristram Shandy in that nice copy.
Oh.
I'll mail it to you. You can have it. I was going to put it up on Decayed Orbit.
No, you need to spray the edges first. You need
the
to...
edges are, they're gold.
What?
They have gold leaf.
Oh my goodness.
It's a gold leaf edge. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, I guess I should have said that. Yeah, I think I'm there because that's like part of the series, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really, sprayed edges, I guess, are just the new gold leaf edges.
That's right.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll just send that to you. Speaking of Decayed Orbit, when's this coming out? The 12th?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, it is.
It's coming out the 13th. On the 15th, in 2 days from this coming out, we will be doing a new drop over on Decayed Orbit.
That's DecayedOrbitBooks.com.
Mm-hmm. I'll put the description down the link. This is our like drop-based used bookstore where we get rid of things that we don't want anymore. And occasionally, look, actually over on SF Ultra recently, Sean like really went into this, but like I have the same thing that Sean does, which is like I enjoy reading a lot. I read a lot of books, but I probably read somewhere between like I read somewhere on average, you know, past 5 years or so, like 70-ish books a year. You know, some years like 100 and something, some years fewer than that. But you know, I read a fair amount, but not a huge amount. Mm-hmm. You know, my very brave wife reads like double the amount of books that I do in a year. But I buy like 500 books a year, probably just some huge number. And so I got a lot of in and out because fundamentally one of my hobbies, and this has been my hobby since I was like 15, 16, is I like book buying. Like I like buying books. I think buying books is fun. I have developed over the years, like really good relationships with used bookstore owners. And, I like learning like what certain imprints are and like what certain historical books are. And so, you know, I've got, God, probably thousands of books in my house. I wouldn't want to count them. And they're like in bins everywhere. Like, you know, I have like all of my soft covers are just like in bins stacked up.
Mm-hmm. You sleep on a pile of books instead of a bed.
Well, my bed is made of books.
Mm-hmm.
The books is my bed.
Right, right.
So, you know, however you want to call it, I guess. But mm-hmm. The books is bed, I think. We all agree the books is bed.
Yeah, I think the books is bad.
Mm-hmm. The books is bad. But so doing all that stuff, you know, and so I'm trying to make an active effort to get these damn things out of my house slowly but surely. And occasionally, yes, in between drops, I am at the used bookstore and I'm like, ooh, this is a good curatorial move. You know what I mean? I can put this. I know I already have a soft cover of the second book of this series. I can buy the first book and I can just offer them together. You know, so there's a little bit of that. For the most part, it's just me trying to get rid of stuff that I've had for a long time that I've either read, enjoyed, or started reading and didn't enjoy, so I'm getting rid of it. But it's all coming through like our collections, you know, is the idea. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and you're doing that too. You're doing a fun thing. You want to talk about your Shakespeare thing? You want to pitch that real quick?
Yeah. So one of the things you may have heard earlier in the episode that I'm a cool guy, which means that I've
and you're a cool guy. We know that.
Oh, yes. And as we all as we all know, being a cool guy means one has studied Shakespeare. And this is a thing that I talk about on these podcasts, but struggle to think of, like, what can I do with this very specific realm of knowledge that otherwise I don't touch on in any way in kind of my day-to-day interactions. So I've decided that through Decade Orbit, I'm going to initiate a project where I'm going to try to write one short Decade Orbit length essay. So some of these books, you don't just buy the books from us, you buy the book and you get an essay that we've written about like 1500 words or a little bit less, something that you could just print on a zine style kind of little fold up.
Yep, I just did mine. I finally got the one that I did out the door. It took me forever. Apologies to the person who ordered it. Mm-hmm. But I did cover designs for it, and I printed it, and it looked cool. It was on the Dead Zone.
Yeah.
If you order a copy of the Dead Zone in the future, you can also get a copy of that one. But that's the only way to get my writing about the Dead Zone. And probably I'm going to change them. I think you did this originally, but for the Stephen King books, I think I'm going to do it by decade.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to write a King in the 80s essay, a King in the 90s essay, et cetera.
Right. I don't know how I'm going to handle the King stuff, because honestly, I haven't done this with any of... did I do it with the King stuff? I don't think I have. I didn't do any King books last time.
Oh, okay. I thought you did. Maybe we just talked about it.
No, we did just talk about it. But we're talking about Shakespeare. For the Shakespeare project, I'm going to try to find used copies of every Shakespeare play and then sell those copies along with an essay that I write about that play, with the idea that when I have written a bunch of, like, when I have written an essay about every single play, then I will collate those into a single volume that then people can purchase and have all of the essays together. So
it's fun.
You could be a person then who gets a limited run first single original printing of this essay, but before the whole thing comes out. So yeah, it's an interesting challenge in that I don't know if I can reliably find every Shakespeare play used, but we'll figure that out when we get there.
I do like that for some of them, because some of them much harder to come by than others. You're going to have to buy a used copy of the complete Shakespeare, that like big like textbook thing. And you're like, this is the essay is for this like 14 page fragment that's in the bag.
Yep. That's what I'll do.
People like that. Yeah, people will enjoy reading that. It's a cool idea.
Yeah. I just figure if you want to know my Shakespeare ideas, I'll write them down somewhere.
Michael Shakespeare ideas. He was fake. He was the Duke of Norwich or something.
That's right. The Duke of Norwich.
Is that a guy?
Is that
a
guy? I don't know. Is Duke of Norwich a title?
You're going to look it up. It's going to be William Shakespeare. It's going to be example William Shakespeare.
William Shakespeare. It's the Duke of Norfolk, unfortunately. There does not appear to be a Norwich in the peerage.
That just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. This is just a place I made up. Very good. All right. Well, we will be back in a month. Yeah, that's over at Decade Orbit Books on the 15th is when the thing will drop. I probably got like 40 or... I don't want to promise too much. My hope is at least 40 things on there. It actually takes a while to list stuff, so...
I'm not going to be listing all of those at once because I'll be having to write the essays. I've probably got like 4 or 5 books I'm going to put up at once.
Some stuff got essays. You're paying more money for it. Some stuff is just books I got to get rid of. And so I'm gonna list a bunch of books I got to get rid of, and then probably several Stephen King books from one of the eras. And for the most part, the Stephen King books that I'm putting up there are the ones that I read for the show. I'm just trying to get rid of them. If they aren't those books, I'll let you know. They come with mine. Yours come with special Michael stickers,
mm-hmm.
and mine come with special me stickers. because we haven't seen each other the stickers that we've ordered.
No, we haven't. I need to get more. I only printed off a few test stickers, like some little stacks to go with this first drop.
Mm. Well, I've got hundreds.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure I was like uploading the images correctly before I ordered 100 stickers.
I ordered like 500 stickers. I'm ready.
Okay.
For me, we got The Book Is Good.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Range Touch Puppetry sticker.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I made a Christine sticker a while back.
Nice.
My favorite car. What if, did you think, so Brady's been made psychic.
That's right.
What if the car gets made in Christine? The Mercedes.
Oh, and he's like driving the Mercedes around that town. Oh, that would be mm-hmm. so good.
It would be cool. Well, that's for a different day.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll be back in a month with Kingdom Hospital.
No. Rose Red.
Sorry. I'm re-get brained. Mm-hmm. With Rose Red. And then on the mainline episode will be, was it Bazaar of Bad Dreams?
Yep, that's right.
A bizarrely bad title. Yo!
Woo-hoo.
Got him. Oh, take that, Steve. All right. We'll be back in a month. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for supporting us here on Patreon. Patreon.com/RangeTouch for all of your Just King things and Shelved by Genre and other things needs. And soon, Baby Chauncey Show. Although that'll probably just be on all podcast platforms.
Yeah, probably.
But it's coming. We're getting ready. We're working on it.
It's coming. All right. Well, there's no poem this time. So just remember, do it for Steve.